Hello and welcome
Love
to
Talk Radio.
I did it again. Hello and welcome to the November 6th edition of Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder. I'm your host, Adam J. Sinclair, and tonight we'll be focusing on the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, the FIA World Endurance Championship, Formula One, and more. As we have been for the past 2 weeks, we are joined by Circle Track racer Michael Lally, who will bring some of her on-track experience and knowledge into the Thunderdome this evening. Hello, how you doing?
Great, how are you?
Great, how are you?
Not too bad. Did you get a chance to watch any of the racing for this past weekend?
I did. I actually got the chance to watch the Sprint Cup race.
What do you think about that event? I thought the ending was a little bit more interesting than the rest of the race.
You know, me too,
you know,
actually.
Me too.
How about that fight,
about that
I guess?
Well, it seemed that if there wasn't a fight, it wouldn't really be much of a story because Jimmy Johnson dominated most of the event. It, the very end with Keselowski taking a space, which was a legitimate move. It was a good racing move, and he had to jump in there. If he hadn't, somebody else would have. And I think a lot of the members of the pit crews overreacted a little bit, and NASCAR agreed with me, and gave everybody quite a nice fine that has been paid, fortunately, by their team owners. So, but it'll be interesting for the next six races to see how some of the teams have to change their organization on pit road and how they see if it changes their attitude at all.
Yeah.
I think they all deserve to get fined.
I'm glad that they got fined.
You ever had any fights in any of your racing there?
Oh yes. There was actually one fight where it was actually my brother on the track, and he took the low line because he was coming out of the corner and his car was pushing, so he took the low line, and he ended up accidentally coming down as a car was going up, and so, you know, he made the guy spin out on accident. I mean, it wasn't on purpose. He's not a dirty driver at all. And when we were going, or not when we, when he was going through the pit to go back to our pit, the dad of the kid that he accidentally hit threw a tire at my brother's windshield. And so that ended up breaking my brother's windshield, and, you know, of course that caused a big, you know, it caused a big riot and stuff in the pits. And, I mean, nothing, you know, no punches were thrown or anything, but there were people that weren't very happy about it, especially my dad, because, you know, he broke my brother's windshield, and it wasn't broken to begin with until, you know, the other dad got mad and threw the tire at it. But anyway, that actually ended our season that year because the track didn't do anything about it. But, yeah, it was crazy.
Sounds like it.
And then there was another race, too, where I wasn't really paying attention because, you know, I typically, when I'm not racing, I watch the races. I don't care about what's going on in the pits, really. And I don't really remember what happened, but all I know is I seen a guy running across the pits with a pipe after some other guy, and I was like, oh, my gosh. So it gets pretty intense.
Seems like it. As long as they're not coming towards you with a pipe, I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Just keep your eyes open.
Yeah. What about you? Have you seen any crazy fights?
Not really. No, nothing. Nothing crazy at all. The only time I've actually been close enough to pit road for that sort of thing was a motorcycle race, and they were all pretty calm. So nothing that exciting.
Well, that's good, though, that, you know, people can still keep calm.
Yeah, as the the guy from NASCAR said, the racing is not hockey. And I think that's kind of a little bit of a generalization, because hockey is trying to move away from fighting as well. But fighting doesn't really have a place in motorsports. They get the job done on the racetrack, and if they don't, then they don't. And if they have an issue with somebody on the racetrack, they discuss it. They don't go out and try and beat the crap out of them. That doesn't really solve anything.
Well, what really irritates me is you know, like, one accidentally gets hit. One car accidentally comes down with another car. And they act like big babies about it. It's like, hello, you're in the world of motorsports. You're going to get hit once in a while. Don't act like a baby about it. Just take it like a man or a woman, you know.
That's it. People need to pay attention. They need to understand that they can't control everything that happens on the racetrack. And I think that's kind of the issue as well. They don't like the idea that they can't control what's going on, and they get a little crazy.
Yeah.
Well, first guest of the evening tonight is...
Never mind. Sorry.
Our first guest of the evening this evening is Jay Havens. He's a third-generation racer from Martinsville, Virginia. Havens is an up-and-coming driver in the Whelen All-American Series. At only 25 years of age, Havens has spent more than 10 years behind the wheel and has two decades of experience in the sport. He has driven for three teams in his 72-race career and has two wins, 63 top fives, and 68 top tens. A recent injury, however, has taken him out of the car for now. And this driver for next season is Steve Brody.
Racing is a family affair for Havens. He started racing with his father, Mike, and Grandpa Richard. They have always had a family-owned team and built their cars from ground up. He is married to wife, Charity, and his son, Austin, helped to determine his time on the program this evening.
Hello, and welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
Not too bad.
Good.
First off, I'd like to ask, has racing always been a dream of yours?
Absolutely. Since I was about 5 years old, all I've ever wanted to do is drive race cars, work on race cars, and the good Lord's been fortunate enough to bless me with a family who was involved in the sport, and I guess I got to live my dream through all of that. So I'm not going to complain about having a pretty decent career so far. So if the good Lord blesses me with a few more years of it, I'll still be happy doing it then.
There you go. How would you gauge the 2014 season as a whole?
Well, we run into a little bit of turmoil this year right at the beginning of the season. I had intentionally planned on driving the full season in my family-owned modified, and at the first race ended up having some medical issues going on with my back and causing my legs to go numb. So I sat out for 90% of the season, and while doing that, I was still helping out with a couple different teams, and we still had a pretty decent year so far. So I've still got one more race for this year, and we're going to see if we can go to Myrtle Beach in a couple weeks and see what we can do down there.
How difficult is it for you to find sponsors in today's economy?
It is extremely difficult. The way that the economy is now, there's not many local businesses that want to take a shot on sponsoring race cars anymore. I would love to find a company that is willing to back me financially, but the way that everything's looking right now, it's not very easy, and sponsors are few and far between unless you've got a well-known name like the Earnhardts and Petties and stuff like that.
What's your favorite racetrack?
Well, on the circuits that I've ran so far in my career, I would definitely have to say Ace Speedway down in Burlington, North Carolina, and Orange County Speedway are probably my two favorite tracks. Orange County's little short track that carries a whole lot of speed through the corners, but Ace has got that real close, tight racing. So if I could find a mixture of both, that'd be the perfect track. But I would definitely say that those are my two favorites as of right now.
I know you've been following the NASCAR Sprint Cup a little bit. Who do you think is going to end up taking the title in Homestead?
Ooh, that's hard to say. With the way that everything's looking, it's probably going to be either Joey Logano or Brad Keselowski. But I'm still hoping that Kevin Harvick will be able to pull out his first championship, especially with Stuart Haas and everybody.
Mm-hmm. And that would be interesting. It's his first year for the team, and he's definitely had a really good year. He's had some ups and downs in his career, and this would be a great shot for the championship for him, and it's been a great season no matter how it turns out for him.
Absolutely. I've been a Harvick fan since 2001, and I think that this year has definitely been his best year of his Sprint Cup career so far, so I'm hoping he can top off a good successful successful season this year with that championship. Fingers crossed we'll have that four car in Victory Lane at Phoenix, and that way he'll be able to race into Homestead and hopefully take that championship.
There you go. If you weren't involved in racing, what do you think you'd be doing now?
I've been asked that question a few times, and honestly, I can't come up with an answer. I've sat down and thought about it. If I was to quit racing today, what would I do? And honestly, I'd probably drive myself and my wife insane. But I'm not really sure. I'd probably be selling parts at a dealership or something like that. I'm still working on cars on the side. But honestly, I couldn't picture myself without racing. So.
What steps do you take to prepare for a race every week?
Well, throughout the week, my dad, myself, and a couple of my guys on my crew will go over the car, set it up, weigh it out, make sure that every nut and bolt is tight on that car, just so I know from my own personal preference that everything's right on it. And then when we get to the track, my whole team gathers before the first practice and says one big prayer together, and I've also got a couple motivational songs that I listen to before I get in the car, and a little bit of a pre-workout type thing too. But the main thing that I myself like to do with my team is definitely have that team prayer, just asking God to help us to get through that night unscathed and hopefully with a successful night.
Now, my co-host has a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
What are some of the things you like to do on the off-season?
Most of the time during the off-season, I'll get together with my family. I'm very devoted to my family. I like hanging out with them and taking short trips or long trips with them. And I'm also a football fan, so, of course, me and a bunch of my guy friends will all get together, like on Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon, and definitely get together and play some football, whether it be touch, tackle, however you want to look at it. It can get kind of rough, but I definitely say during the off season, it's a whole lot of sporting events such as football, basketball. I'm just constantly on the move, and now that I've got my son, he'll be one in December, so I definitely enjoy spending a whole lot of time with him and watching him grow and trying to help point him in the right direction of which way to go. And I think for this offseason, there'll be a whole lot of time with him.
How did you get your start in racing?
Well, my grandfather, Richard, he's been racing for the last 50 years almost, and throughout his whole racing career, he's had everything from late models all the way up to what's now the Nationwide Series, as far as he's gotten in his career as far as owning cars. I'm actually the second Havens to ever drive a car. My uncle tried driving earlier in the late 90s, early 2000s, and he had some pretty decent success, but due to sponsor troubles and financial troubles, we had to stop for a little while. But when my grandpa got a little bit on up there in age, my dad kind of pitched in and helped him, and when I got old enough to realize what was going on, I decided to step in and kind of help push the family team up a little bit more and a little bit more. And when I turned 15, I started driving and haven't looked back since.
Do you see yourself moving up from where you are now?
Well, after I had my medical issues earlier in the season, I've had to step out of the driver's seat and take over as a crew chief and spotter position. But after speaking with my doctor, I've actually had to officially medically retire from driving. So I'm trying to work my way back into a different position with the team. So I would hopefully like to see myself make it up to, like, your trucks or ARCA or something like that as either a crew chief or a spotter. And if I'm ever able to get back in behind the wheel, I'd love to see my career go all the way up to the trucks, Nationwide Cup, those type of things.
What is your, if you were able to do that, which team would you be interested in being with? Or do you have your own team?
If I was able to make it up to the trucks or Nationwide or the Cup Series, I would definitely want to be in a team with Hendrick Power. I've always been a big fan of Mr. Hendricks and his organization. And I've also been a big fan of Richard Childress' equipment also. And as a diehard Chevrolet guy, I'd love to be able to get behind the wheel of one of their bow ties and see what happens.
There you go. We've got time for a couple of questions. If anyone has any questions for Jay Havens, please call in now to 215-383-3681. Who's your favorite driver in the, aside from your own team? Which team is do you keep an eye on in the modified series?
With the modifieds, I definitely keep a watch on Ryan Preece a lot. He's extremely talented, and I've always enjoyed watching him drive. And with my hometown being really close to Bowman Gray Stadium, I'm always going to be a big fan of Bert and Jason Myers, and also John Boyd Brown and his brother Joseph, and I've also become a pretty good fan of Chris Fleming and the whole Fleming family racing organization. They're actually a couple of good friends of mine. I used to work with Chris. And Luke, he's been driving their Tour Modified this year, and he's had some really good success, and I'm extremely proud of the way that his career is advancing. So he's going to be one to keep an eye on for the next year. So he's very, very talented, and I hope he does well in his next season.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program tonight. And I wish you all the success in the world. Hopefully your medical condition improves, but if not, you've got a pretty good team going there, and hopefully you're able to keep that going and keep your spotting career going as well.
Well, I'm hoping so, and we're definitely going to see what we can do this year with Steve Brody coming on board for us, and he's had a really good career on dirt, and he's going to try to make his start on some asphalt stuff and see what he can do with the Havens Racing 00 this year, and hopefully we'll come back in 2015 with a couple good wins, and if everything goes right, we'll hopefully be able to run for a championship. So,
are you planning on being in Daytona for the modified race there?
Absolutely. I've already got my vacation time from work already organized to where I can go, and hopefully I'm going to enjoy all of Speed Weeks from Daytona, including the modifieds, the late models, K&N, ARCA, and of course the Cup Nationwide and trucks too. So,
well, maybe I'll see you there. Hope you have a
Most
good
off-season. All right, I appreciate you guys letting me come on tonight.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Once again, I'd like to thank Jay Havens for taking time out of his schedules to join me in the Thunderdome. We've got roughly 10 minutes or so until our next guest comes on the program. So I'd like to take a moment and run our Snake and Mongoose promo.
Get ready to relive the greatest rivalry in drag racing history. It's Don the Snake Prudhomme versus Tom the Mongoose McEwen, facing off in the feature film Snake and Mongoose. The movie stars all your favorite cars from the 60s and 70s and includes some spectacular scenes using vintage footage from the old glory days. Get it now on DVD and Blu-ray or download directly to your electronic device. Available in stores, Redbox, at Amazon.com, or online at snakeandmongoosemovie.com/store.
And welcome back to the Thursday night program with Jason Sinclair and Michael Mullally. We're here this evening. We just had Jay Havens on the program. Our next guest will be a member of the Extreme Speed Motorsports team, and I'm not going to try and butcher his last name just yet. The Extreme Speed Motorsports team just returned from their race in Shanghai. It was their second World Endurance Championship event, and they actually finished on the podium, so congratulations to them. I don't know the exact results of the FIAWEC event because the coverage in this country was not as good as it could be. The only information available was internet-based information, and I took the liberty of reposting a lot of that on the SpeedwayDigest.com page. The World Endurance Championship has been a thorn in the side of certain promoters here in this country. The International Motorsport Association has had some issues with them in the past, and they've sort of gone back and forth. But personally, I hope that the World Endurance Championship returns to Sebring in the future. That was an awesome thing to have there. They've also been Daytona in the past. It'd be cool to see them come back. They bring in a lot of different teams from all over the world that you don't necessarily get to see as much in this country. So who do you think is going to be the next race winner in NASCAR? Do you think it'll be one of the Chase racers, or do you think it'll be somebody different?
Well, last weekend really threw me off because I thought for sure it would be one of the Chasers, but it wasn't, so that really threw me off. But I think the next winner is going to be Kyle Busch, just because I think he's due to win. Who do you think is going to be the next winner?
I'm going to have to pull for Jeff Gordon again because he's, as we can tell from his experiences this past weekend, Jeff Gordon is definitely passionate about winning this year. And he's done really well at Phoenix in the past. And it would be good to see him go on and win. If he doesn't, I'm sure he'll be really pissed, and he probably won't spend any time talking to the press after the race. But it'll be quite the event at Phoenix, and it'll set the stage for Homestead the following week, and it'll be Homestead will be an awesome event, I'm hoping. They still have tickets available for the Homestead Miami Speedway race. If anybody's interested, go to homesteadmiamispeedway.com. I know Phoenix actually sold out, which is an awesome thing for Phoenix, because the racing and even in Chase, the racing hasn't filled up the grandstands as much as I'm hoping, as I think that NASCAR was hoping. But it's a good thing for Phoenix, and that could be a good sign for the sport.
Do you think there's going to be some retaliation this upcoming race from the last one? Do you think there's going to be some hard feeling?
I think there might be, but I don't know. Phoenix is a relatively short track, and I don't know how well that'll work there. Of course, Homestead isn't really much bigger, so it remains to be seen. But I think that NASCAR slapped everybody's hands good enough after the race, and I think that they'll try to be on better behavior after the event, but that really remains to be seen. And during the event, you never know. I know that there's some teams that have already gone to next year's setups for the cars. other teams that are basically going around in circles trying to figure out what the next move is for next season. And then you've got the Chase drivers who are running their own race entirely. I always thought it was interesting when Tony Stewart was asked about the chase for the championship, and he said that it almost felt like the other drivers had to keep a distance between them and the racers in the chase. I don't know how true that is necessarily this season, but it is something to think about.
Yeah. I really think that if Tony Stewart didn't have that accident with Kevin Ward Jr., I think he would be definitely one in the chase this year.
Mm-hmm. It was good a couple weeks ago when Tony Stewart finished in the top five, and he actually seemed happy. He was smiling. It was good to have him. I think that was part of the healing process for him anyway. It was a lot better than when he ran up on the hood of Brad Keselowski the previous week. That definitely wasn't a healing moment for Tony Stewart.
No, but it was entertaining to the rest of us.
Well, we're on the topic of Phoenix. The ESPN will have a live telecast of the Quick and Loans Race for Heroes 500 with the NASCAR Countdown presented by 5-Hour Energy at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And the race's green flag is set for 3:15 p.m. The race will also run live in Spanish on ESPN Deportes at 3 p.m. That's a lot better than last week's time of like 4 o'clock in the morning. Extended post-race will air on ESPN Sports Center with analyst Ricky Craven in the studio and NASCAR Sprint Cup driver Carl Edwards providing additional analysis from the track. It's kind of interesting that ESPN seems to be getting more on the ball with their NASCAR coverage near the end of their time actually covering NASCAR. And that'll be something because it's been ESPN and NASCAR have been synonymous for 28 years. They took a 7-year break at the beginning of the 2000s from like 2000 to 2006. But now it looks like the break will be a lot longer, and it's definitely a change in the sport, and hopefully it's a change for the better.
I wish ESPN wasn't so hard to find. You know, like, I mean, like, I know on, like, different, you know, like, Dish or DirecTV, you know, like, some don't even have ESPN. Or,
mm-hmm.
You know, like, I wish they were consistent, you know, like, I don't really know how to put it.
I know earlier in the year, there were people who were calling for the thing that it might be time for a NASCAR network. But I think that NASCAR is kind of afraid of that. They've tried the FansChoice.tv thing, which is actually a pretty good site, but if it gets... It's just like any other site on the internet, including the Blog Talk Radio site and the Speedway Digest site and other things like that. When there's too many people on the site at a certain time, it gets really, really slow. And the future might be the internet for television, that sort of thing, but the future isn't now yet. And they're, in some cases, I think they're trying to jump ahead of where technology is. They have to find a balance between the making money and having the races accessible to everybody. And next year, I think with Fox and with NBC both covering NASCAR, and most of those races being on the network, their network local affiliates. It might be a little bit better thing for the ratings, and time will tell, I suppose. For people who are interested, the ESPN2 will be airing NASCAR Sprint Cup qualifying in Phoenix on Friday, November 7th at 6:30 p.m. The track will also hold a 200-mile NASCAR Nationwide Series race on Saturday, November 8th, and that race will air live on ESPN at 3:30 p.m., with a green flag slated for 4:15 p.m. That's the race that they're going to have on at 4 o'clock in the morning on ESPN Deportes on November 9th. They always like having a race on 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going to... Personally, I'm not going to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch the race. But there we go.
No, that's dedication.
It is. Well, looks like our next guest
is on the line. Our next guest is Ryan Dial. Dial began his racing career in 1999 in Formula Vauxhall. He drove in British Formula Renault and British Formula 3. Before moving to the United States. From 2002 until 2004, he spent 3 years in the Toyota Atlantic Championship, finishing runner-up twice before moving to the American Le Mans Series in 2005. He also contested one Champ Car race for Dale Coyne Racing at Toronto, finishing in ninth place. In 2006, he drove a Daytona prototype in the Rolex Sports Car Series. From 2007 to 2009, he drove part-time with various teams in the Daytona prototype class, then returned to full-time in 2010. DL returned to the Champ Car World Series in 2000 as driver of one of the two Pacific Coast Motorsports cars. He was dropped by the team and replaced by Mario Dominguez in September 2007, with two races of the season remaining. His best Champ Car finish was 7th place in the Toronto Grand Prix at the own track he raced the Champ Car at more than once. In 2008, he piloted the Samax Motorsports Riley BMW Daytona prototype alongside teammate Henri Zogabe. He also competed in the inaugural season of Super League Formula. In 2009, Dial competed for Orbit Racing in the Grand American Sports Car Series, recording one podium finish and numerous top tens. Dial and teammates Terry Borscheller, Yao Barbosa, and Mike Rockenfeller won the 2010 Rolex 24 Daytona, driving a Porsche Riley for Action Express Racing. Following this, he began driving full-time for Star Wars Motorsports alongside Mike Forrest. In January of 2012, Dial scored his first Rolex Sports Car Series pole position in the 2012 24 Hours of Daytona while driving the number 8 Star Wars Motorsports Riley Ford Daytona prototype. He went on to finish second in the race with teammates Alan McNish, Lucas Luhr, Enzo Poligio, and Alex Popoff. At the 2012 12 Hours of Sebring, Dial scored a surprise third overall finish, with co-drivers Enzo Poligio and Stefan Sarrazin also taking first place in WEC LMP2 class. He also won the 2012 24 Hours of Le Mans with Enzo Poligio and Tom Kimber-Smith, driving the Star Wars Motorsports HPD ARX-03B in LMP2. Dial competes for the Extreme Speed Motorsports team, racing in both the Tour United Sports Car Championship as well as the FIA Endurance Championship. I would like to welcome him to the program. Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you very much for coming. First off, how would you gauge the 2014 season?
It's been an interesting season for, you know, everybody in, you know, sports car racing in North America, obviously with the merge of American Le Mans Series and Grand Am into the United Sports Car Series. So, I think there was, a number of obstacles that everybody had to overcome. But, you know, all in all, it's been a good season. You know, it's nice to get podiums every year. A little disappointed this year we never got the top step with my car, but all in all, no complaints. Long season, and definitely looking forward to some time off here.
Earlier in the season, you scored back-to-back poles at Indianapolis and at the at Road America. Do you feel that was a turning point from the season for your team?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say so. I think, straight out of the box at Daytona, we knew the P2 car was going to struggle a little bit against the Daytona prototypes. Sebring, we were very competitive, pretty much led most of the race, and couldn't quite close off with a late yellow in the race. And then we had a bit of a slump after that. We had a couple of mechanicals and also, you know, just racetracks that didn't suit the high downforce of the P2 car. Then we did get to those couple of tracks where the P2 car was suited. We got a couple of back-to-back back-to-back poles along with a couple of back-to-back podiums. So I definitely think that was the kind of point in the year where the Petroni SM team started to kind of gel. And I was new to the team, as was a number of our crew members. So it was definitely, you know, the thing started to click.
You just mentioned your back-to-back podiums in the in IMSA. I know you just scored recent back-to-back podiums in WEC with third at the Circuit of the Americas and then second in Shanghai. How do you enjoy that sort of racing, and do you hope to compete in additional World Endurance Championship events in 2015?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's World Endurance. It's the best sports car teams in the world, and, you know, I think that, you know, IMSA was tough this year for us, not having a lot of P2 competition. So, you know, it was important for us to go there and at least kind of gauge our team where we thought we were at, which we definitely believed we were a race-winning contender team. So it was nice to go there on home soil, first of all, with the Circuit of Americas, and then to go away from home and go to China last week and score a really good second place. You know, it's a different world. WEC racing is very different to IMSA. But, you know, the big picture for us was gaining experience and figuring out how the ACO rules work. I mean, the goal for the team is to be in Le Mans 24 Hours in 2015. So, you know, we took it upon ourselves to go learn some experience this year and put in a play for next year.
When you're not racing, how do you spend your free time?
Well, yeah, good question. I mean, you know, it's difficult, you know, to kind of find consistency in your life when you spend most of your life kind of traveling and with an inconsistent racing schedule. You know, for me, I'm a bit of a house husband. You know, I take care of things at home when I'm home. I got a bunch of animals. We have a horse, dog, and a cat. I really build life away from the track.
What's your ultimate goal in motorsports?
Ultimate goal? You know, I think I've done a lot of the goals I set out to do. You know, in 2012, I won Sebring 12-hour, Le Mans 24-hour, Petit Le Mans. I won Daytona the year or two before that. You know, the only things I want to do at this point is continue to win those races and win championships. I'm with a great team. I'm in the car I want to be driving. So, you know, for me, it's not about what the goals are. It's really about how many times I can reach my goals. And I feel like I've definitely already reached the races I want to win. You know, the goals are how many times can I win them. So you just got to take one year at a time.
Which racetracks do you feel that you performed the best at in 2014? And what is your favorite racetrack of all time?
Favorite racetrack of all time is definitely Circuit Le Sarthe, which is the Le Mans 24-hour race. Biggest challenging, highest speeds, longest track. I think for 2014, if I had to just pick one outright track of where I felt I performed well, was Road America if I looked at IMSA, and then Shanghai last week if I looked at WEC. So between the two of them.
What's your favorite part about being a race car driver?
I mean, for me, I grew up, I was a fanatic of cars. You know, I don't have any family background. You know, my father was a baker, and nobody in my family had anything to do with racing, but I was that kid that had all the posters on the walls and, you know, only played with cars. So for me, a lot of it is getting to, you know, buy cool machinery and operate cool machinery and be involved and surrounded by high-performance cars, so I think that's my biggest kick.
With the ESM Patron team based out of South Florida, how much testing do you do at tracks such as Homestead, Miami, and Palm Beach International?
I'm new to the team, but you know, even my previous team, Starworks, was South Florida. And, you know, you find that it's a great place to be based. You know, I think there's three or four places in the country that, you know, race teams really want to be based. You know, there's Indianapolis, there's Charlotte, and then there's basically, you know, South Florida. Yeah, I wouldn't say we do a huge amount of testing on Homestead. Homestead's very rough on tires, and so there's only a limited amount you can learn there. Palm Beach, to be honest, we used to run a lot of PBIR. You know, we've been many shakedowns, especially with Starworks, where, you know, if we were heading off to a track and we wanted just to shake the car down for 30 minutes, we would do that. You know, and same thing with the Petroni FM team. You know, we're just right down the street, actually, from PBIR. So, you know, we try and get out there as much as we can, and, you know, I think it's important for, you know, race teams like ours to support the local community. So we try and do our bit.
Overall, how do you think that IMSA did with the bounce performance as well as in general this season?
Well, I think we did the best we could. You know, I think it's no secret that we definitely felt we were on the little bit rough end of the prototype's BOP. You know, but a good British saying is, you know, it's chalk and cheese. And, you know, you take two very, very different categories, which was Daytona prototypes and the Le Mans P2 cars, and making them do an equal lap time, I think, was the goal. And I think IMSA succeeded in getting lap times equal. How the cars raced on track was very different, and I think that was the frustration for, you know, parties on both sides. You know, I think it was tough for the DP drivers to pass us and vice versa for us to pass them. So, tough question, even tougher job to do. I'm glad I had nothing to do with it. But I think that, you know, they did as much as they could do in the first year, and we're definitely curious to see what changes can be made in the off season.
Now, my co-host has a couple of questions for you.
What's your favorite part about the sport?
Favorite part about the sport? I'm very much a social person. I love meeting new people, and, you know, I could pretty much talk anybody's ear off. So for me, I enjoy going to the places, and, you know, a combination of the traveling and, you know, especially when we get to do the international races, getting to see the different cultures and how different race fans in different parts of the world react. And I think put a smile on everybody's face. You know, we try and remember that we're in an entertainment sport, and hopefully we get to entertain.
What is the toughest part about racing? Like, for you, what is the toughest part about it?
Well, I think the toughest part for me is actually, you know, keeping your employment every year and seeking out new jobs and finding that security in this sport. You know, I'm very fortunate to be in a good team with Petroni SM, and, you know, great to be in a very stable environment. But, you know, each year as a driver, you're only as good as your last race. And, you know, nowadays there's more drivers than there is opportunities. And I think keep it on your toes and continually trying to improve yourself and stay ahead of the competition, I think, is the hardest part.
Do you feel that you've, come a long way from, where you started to where you are now? Or did you kind of, has it been, a dream of yours and just, great that you came this far, or did you really ever see yourself doing this?
You know, I think I always had aspirations to be at this point in my career. You know, I don't feel like a driver should have a peak. I feel that, you know, much like endurance races, you can't just peak for one lap. You have to peak for a long period of time, and I feel right now like I'm at the top of the game. I think from 2010 onwards, I feel like I've really been at a good level of performance. You know, for me, it's trying to maintain that. You don't want to go backwards. So continue to try and push and continue to try and, you know, add races to your resume that, you know, you're proud of. And, you know, I'm proud of what I've done so far.
Looks like we've got time for at least one or two questions for Ryan. If you're interested, please call in now to 215-383-3681. What's your favorite part about competing at the Daytona International Speedway?
Oh, Daytona is just a very special place. My first opportunity to go to Daytona was actually when I was racing in open wheel racing. And I went there, I had some friends, I live in Orlando, I had some friends came to stay with me and they wanted to go check out this place. To me, I wasn't as aware of how big Daytona was, not just as a venue, but mainly as a sport, as a spectacle. And I remember driving under the tunnel the first time and we were on the, you know, train, tram system, tourist thing there, and when we pulled up the other side, I mean, I'd been to ovals and I'd been to different tracks for Champ Car, but I had never driven into something like this, and it blew me away. That was my first impression. Then to get to drive there, my first time actually on the track was in 2005. I got to race there in 2006 for the 24-hour, but in 2005 I actually drove the July 4th race there in Grand Am, and just a place that I look forward to going every year. You know, it's one of, for me, it's also a little bit of a home track. So everything about it is just a great event.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program this evening, and I'll be at the track in Homestead, or the track in Homestead, the track in Daytona, and for the 24-hour race. And I'll look forward to seeing you, and wish you the best of luck next season.
Great, sounds good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Once again, that was Ryan DL, and we'd like to thank you very much for taking a few minutes to talk with us. Personally, I don't think I'd be up for talking to anybody after having that much jet lag from flying from Shanghai back to Florida just a few days ago.
Have you ever flown? Like, have you ever flown from, like, I don't know, like a long distance, like a long, long distance? Or
yeah, not halfway across the world back to here. But the longest distance was from Portland back to here. That was far enough because it's a heck of a flight from there. It's like it's an all day event because you spend. Between the time in the airport and the time in the airplanes and the connections, it was like didn't get sleep for like 22 hours. So, and you have to get used to the time change. It's only 3 hours, which is a heck of a lot better than I think it's 16 between here and Shanghai. But 3 hours is bad enough, and it really screws you up. So.
Yeah, that sounds like it would.
This weekend isn't exactly the busiest weekend of the racing season, but in addition to the NASCAR event, there's also the NHRA Metal Yellow Drag Racing Series. They're going to they have a weekend off before the finale in Pinewood next weekend, but they're also, but the drag racing fans will have the opportunity to see racing action with the NHRA Lucas Oil Series on Sunday, November 9th at 1 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. The one-hour program will feature racing from the recent event at Las Vegas. Speaking of drag racing, next week I'm hoping to have the newest member of the Larson Motorsports team on the program. Her name is, I believe it's Shay Holbrook. She is currently a racer in the Pirelli World Challenge, which is basically a stock car series. She actually did really well. She was a championship contender in the GT class. So it'll be something to ask her why she decided to go from sports car racing to drag racing. Aside from the fact it's like twice the speed, but it's twice the speed in like 4 seconds as opposed to going around for an hour and a half at 100 and some odd miles an hour. But there was some talk a few years ago about teams moving from sports cars into drag racing, and I'm kind of curious as to what her motivation was for that.
Yeah.
Have you ever been involved in drag racing?
No. When I started racing, because we moved from Seattle to Ephrata, and I told my dad, because we were frequent watchers of the NHRA Nationals up in Kent, and when we moved here, I told my dad that I really wanted to drag race, and anyways, you know, we thought about it and stuff, but it wouldn't have really been possible for us, and so I wanted to get into drag racing, and we tried, but stock car racing and stuff it was more possible for us than drag racing. So.
Mm-hmm. I know one of the past guests I've had in this program, Josh White, he's got a start in the IHRA, and he's trying to get going in ARCA in the hopes to move on to NASCAR in the future. But that's definitely a totally different animal there. Just like Brian Settler said a couple weeks ago, he's interested in trying it, but it's not the sort of thing that he is totally gung-ho about. So I think the only driver who's halfway decent both at drag racing and at stock car racing would be Kurt Busch. And his opportunities in drag racing kind of changed after his problems at Phoenix a couple of years ago when he was dropped by Roush Racing, because they had the drag racing team, the Ford team, that was getting a little bit of support from Roush. And that kind of faded when he was dropped by Roush Racing. I know John Andretti's done a little bit of drag racing as well. And even, I think, Casey Mears. But you never really hear about a great success from going from from stock cars or from other sorts of IndyCar or whatever into drag race.
Yeah, I think it would be really interesting to, like, I think we've talked about this before, but to see, like, the NASCAR drivers step into NHRA cars for, like, a weekend, and then the NHRA drivers step into NASCAR cars for a weekend, I think that would be, you know, that would be really cool and something to just see how they adapt to driving, you know, a totally different kind of race car. I think that would be really cool.
I know the Prelude to the Dream, the Tony Stewart thing that he does at Eldora Speedway, they have a couple of NHRA drivers who do that. Cruz Pendragon has done that event a couple of times, as has Ron Capps. They've never really been competitive, but it is interesting to see them try something different.
Yeah. I think they should almost make like a, you know, I don't know how to put it. Almost like a, not like a series or something, but like, you know, if they, you know, if Joey Logano raced Top Fuel Dragster, he gets like, you know, a certain amount of points or something, and then like at the end of the season, I don't know, almost like character points, I guess. I don't know. I think we can know something.
In the past, they had the International Race of Champions, where you get the drivers from all different series, including Formula One, who come over to this country and race in equally prepared cars and compete. And they have drag racing drivers, and they have stock car drivers, they have Formula One drivers, they have sports car drivers, all competing in the same circuit at the same time in the same car. They also have the Race of Champions in England, where it does that same sort of thing, but they do different disciplines. Like you were suggesting, there's like a stock car competition, they have a drag racing competition, and they have like a road rally competition. Carl Edwards did that a couple of years ago. That would be the sort of thing, I think that's the sort of thing that would catch on, but there's just not, as other drivers said in the past, there's just not the sponsorship money out there right now for that sort of thing And I don't necessarily agree with that. I think if the people, it's one of those if you build it, they will come sort of ideas. I think if they were able to agree on an event such as that, the sponsors would line up to support it because it's something you don't see every day. All the drivers I've talked to are race fans first. So they'd be interested in competing, and it would showcase their talents in their own field of Motorsports Plus. It would give them an opportunity to see how other race cars function. So it'd be a good thing.
And I think it'd be really fun to watch, too. You know, like the other drivers step outside of their comfort zone for like a weekend or so. I think that'd be really cool.
So, promoters, if you're listening, please be sure to mention that AJ Sinclair and Michael Mullally recommended that you get this thing going, and it was mentioned first on Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder. I was actually approached by one of my guests, the guy we had on, I think it was last week, Garrett Marchant, who actually wanted this program to sponsor his car. And as I've told you and told my listeners a few times, this program doesn't make any money for me. It doesn't make any money for most of the people involved in the Speedway Digest Racing Network. But that just shows that there's sponsorship opportunities out there for everybody. No matter what level you have, you can choose to sponsor for as little as $10. Some of these drivers would appreciate it. And it's the little bit of sponsorship money that adds up over time. And it helps people to do what they love to do. And it gives us something to talk about, something to watch, and something that'll entertain us for years to come. On that note, please be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as the other episodes of on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at radio.speedwaydigest.com. You can also check out the show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. As always, I'd like to thank Michael Mullally for being with me on the program. Hope that you're able to join us in the Thunderdome for some time to come.
Of course.
I'd also like to invite you to read my nearly daily articles covering all aspects of motorsports at speedwaydigest.com. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you again next week in the Thunderdome.